Today on the 21st Show, since the Department of Education was created, Republicans have wanted to end it. Now, after 45 years, President Trump is pushing to finally make it happen.
In a few moments, I will sign an executive order to begin eliminating the federal Department of Education once and for all.
Among the many things the department does is provide money that supports students in special education. Here in Illinois, the governor's office says this year that amounts to $1.33 billion, affecting 295,000 students. So today we're digging into what eliminating the federal education department would mean for those young people, their families, and their teachers. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Last week, when President Donald Trump signed an executive order aiming to dismantle the Federal Department of Education, he said the move had broad bipartisan support. Of course, the reality is many Democrats have been speaking out against that change, including Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker.
Department of Education, we're going to eliminate it, and everybody knows it's right. And the Democrats know it's right, and I hope they're going to be voting for it because ultimately it may come before them, but everybody knows it's right.
Students in rural communities who rely on federal funding to keep their schools open, students with disabilities and special needs who receive additional support in their classrooms, low-income students who depend on Pell Grants to earn their college degrees, all will be affected.
Since the 1970s, federal law has said students with disabilities have the right to a free, appropriate public education. The Department of Education has enforced that law, making sure students have what they need in their schooling. The attempts to break up the department and the cuts that have already happened have sparked worries about whether students can get that support, even if the president says those functions will be preserved in other departments. There are also questions about what will happen to funding for special education, which Governor Pritzker's office said amounts to $1.33 billion this year, affecting 295,000 children. All this is the subject of our program today. Joining me now is Dr. Michelle Sands. She's an assistant professor in special education at Northern Illinois University. Her PhD is in special education from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's played many roles at all levels of the field, from paraprofessional or aide to teacher to principal and now professor. Dr. Sands, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Valerie Mazzotti is the Roy A. Roberts Distinguished Professor of Special Ed at the University of Kansas. Her PhD is also in the field from the University of North Carolina. She was a consultant on the National Longitudinal Transition Study 2012, arguably a gold standard for data on special education. We'll talk more about that later. For now, Dr. Mazzotti, welcome to the program to you as well.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And also with us is Jen Curran, a social worker at a special education cooperative in Sterling, Illinois. Jen, thank you for taking time out of your day to be with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And in a few minutes later on the program, we'll be joined by two parents of special education students in Illinois. In the meantime, you can join us by calling 800-222-9455. Especially if you know a student or a family that has relied on special education supports. What difference has that made in their lives and the lives of their families? 800-222-9455. All right, there is a lot to set a baseline here. There's a lot that falls under the umbrella of disability. Dr. Mazzotti, what are some of the different forms that takes in an educational context?
We serve IDEA serves students all the way from birth through high school and serve students across the continuum, students who have more complex support needs to students who may have more mild disabilities. It looks different across the continuum, but the real purpose of special education and serving students under IDEA is to ensure that they have all the accommodations and things that they need in place in order to ensure that they attain both in-school and post-school outcomes once they leave the education system.
IDEA, this is one of those fields where there's a lot of acronyms. That's Individuals with Disabilities Education Act for our listeners. Another one, Dr. Sands, we're probably going to hear a lot about are IEPs. And so maybe you can just talk about, you know, how those laws actually translate into classrooms and schools to make sure students have access to education regardless of ability. And Dr. Sands, I'll throw that to you.
Sure, sure. So a child who is deemed eligible for special education support and services, they come together, if they have a parent has a concern with their child's education, or if a teacher expresses to the parent some concerns about their child's progress in the education in the classroom, they can request a child be evaluated. And so during that process, the parent has to consent to that process. And if they do consent, they go through a comprehensive evaluation to look at all of the potential child's strengths as well as their needs. And they develop what's called, if the child's deemed to be eligible for special education, they could develop what's called an individualized education program. And what is included in that is information about where the child currently is at, what their strengths and needs currently are. They create measurable goals that are usually made for about a year for the child to be able to work towards. And then to work towards those goals, they determine as a team what accommodations as well as what services and support the child may need to get to those goals or attain those goals. So sometimes accommodations can be anything from having extended time on assignments to being able to utilize things like Braille or sign language interpreters. So there's a variety. There's like an endless list of potential accommodations or strategies that we use to help a child be able to complete or have access to information or activities as the other students do. But then they can also receive things like occupational therapy, speech and language therapy. They can receive physical therapy depending on what the needs of the child are as well. And they're going to also be determined to, again, hopefully help this child achieve the goals that they've set as a team. So that's what's included in an individualized education plan, and it is considered a legal document because it ensures the child then has a free and appropriate public education.
Jen Curran, I mentioned you're a social worker at a special ed co-op in Sterling, Illinois. You are actually working with students who are on, you know, somewhere on that endless list we heard about. What tell us about the work you do every day in special ed.
Sure, thank you. So I am part of a team that we work to evaluate students for special education services. So kind of like what Dr. Sands was saying, we have a team that includes a school psychologist, the school social worker, typically then a gen ed teacher and a special education teacher, and then possibly any other related services. So that can include a speech and language pathologist. It can include an occupational therapist, physical therapist. That can all be included in evaluating a student for special education services once it is recommended. So primarily for me, through the cooperative, I do the evaluations or the reevaluations. So we do have to reevaluate every 3 years to determine if the student is going to continue receiving services or if they continue to need services. So we are also part of that reevaluation. For the cooperative as a school social worker, I also provide some direct services for students who need any social work support as far as like social skills, being able to self-regulate in the classrooms, also to help students develop some of those coping strategies to help them be successful in the classroom. So there are some students that I also provide direct services on their IEP if it is deemed necessary. So we are in a very rural area. The cooperative services 11 school districts. I currently work in two of those school districts.
Wow, that's quite a region. All right, let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st show. We're talking about what happens to special education as President Trump works to dismantle the federal Department of Education. We did hear from some of you in our texting group about this. Anne in Urbana wrote about her daughter, whom she said has ADHD and severe learning disabilities and was in special ed from the age of 3. Anne says she had to work 2 to 3 times harder than average students, which she did with the help and encouragement of special ed teachers to get her B's and C's. The special ed teachers also taught us how to help her. She was able to graduate from high school, college, and grad school with a master's degree. Special education programs and teachers made a tremendous difference in her quality of life and societal contribution. She now works with children with special needs and is excellent at it. Trump has no idea, as with so many of his actions, what he's doing with the Department of Education. And thanks for sharing that story. My guests for the start of our conversation today are Valerie Mizzotti, a special education professor and researcher at the University of Kansas, Michelle Sands, who's an assistant professor in special ed at Northern Illinois University, and Jen Curran, a social worker at a special ed co-op in Sterling. You can join us at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right. Dr. Mizzotti, talk about the sort of support that schools and school districts and states get to provide this to students from the federal government.
Sure. So really, since the reauthorization of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act in 2004, there's been a lot of supports from the Department of Education, specifically the Office of Special Education Programs, in addition to the Rehab Services Administration, that's helped support students with disabilities. So under the Office of Special Education Programs, or OSEP, there are there have been funded 16 right now, or currently funded, technical assistance and dissemination centers that have been funded to support implementation of IDEA. And through these funds, they've been able to support states and local education agencies in improving outcomes for students with disabilities. And I can talk specifically from my work. I'm a principal investigator with the National Technical Assistance Center on Transition, the Collaborative. So it's a lot of words. NTACTC is our acronym. The work that we do, we work with all 60 states and provide technical assistance around secondary transition, which is really to help states and local education agencies improve post-school outcomes for students with disabilities, in addition to helping them scale up and use evidence-based, research-based, and promising practices. And so this work has had a huge impact on the field of secondary transition. We've seen graduation rates increase, post-school outcome rates increase for students with disabilities. And so through the department and these funds, just our center alone has been funded in various iterations since 2006. And we see states using our resources, reaching out to us for technical assistance to help them figure out the best ways to improve outcomes for their students across the states. We're also one of the centers that is jointly funded. I think we're the only center that's jointly funded under the umbrella of Office of Special Education and Rehab Services. So we're funded through, we're jointly funded by Rehab Services Administration, as well as the Office of Special Education Programs. And so we're not only supporting states in improving outcomes for students with disabilities who are in school, we're helping them improve outcomes for youth with disabilities. So I would say, really, across the continuum, whether it's secondary transition, whether it's behavior, whether it's other aspects of special education, the department has been very integral in helping ensure students with disabilities get the services and supports in the least restrictive environment that they require and are entitled to.
Dr. Sands, we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes here, and when we come back, we'll hear from a couple of parents who have students in special education. But maybe you can just remind us what life was like for families before this law was in place, before these supports were in place. What happened to these sorts of students back then?
Sure. So if you're speaking of prior to the implementation of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, so prior to IDEA, which is its acronym, went into place, they did not have full protections that ensured that students were able to participate in the public schools. Specific states, there were a couple states that were had made the decision on their own to include students in public school settings, but it was typically in segregated settings, so separate classrooms or perhaps in a close location, but not necessarily with integrated into inclusive environments, as we see a lot of times now. I think the Rehabilitation Act of Section 504, the Rehabilitation Act, had provided some guidance in terms of helping students be a part in the public schools, but it didn't provide them with a free and appropriate public education, which is why what makes IDEA so important.
And briefly, I guess, what about, like, what would you say, the bad old days, right? You know, my grandparents' generation or their parents' generation.
So, and I teach this in a lot of my classes. I think a lot of my students are even surprised to find out that a lot of students, before they were included in public education settings, were in institutionalized. So, and those institutions still exist to some extent, but I think the institutions that we're talking about were much more common. If a child was born with a disability, oftentimes parents were guided to make the decision of either keeping their child with a disability or turning them over to these institutions, where there was very minimal in terms of education. It was much more caregiving. And I would say that would be a generous term at most.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a break. We are going to continue our program today on special education in light of what President Trump is doing to end the Department of Education. And he says move its functions elsewhere in government. We are talking about this with several experts, people who do and have worked in the field. We're going to hear from parents when we come back. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about special education, why people need it, how accommodations for students with disabilities work in practice, and all of this in the context of President Trump moving to end the U.S. Department of Education and redistribute its functions elsewhere in government. We're talking about this with Jen Curran, a social worker at a special ed co-op in Sterling, Illinois, Valerie Mazzotti, a special education professor and researcher at the University of Kansas, and Michelle Sands, assistant professor in special ed at Northern Illinois University. We also want to hear the perspectives of parents of students who benefit from special education. If you are one of those and want to call in, 800-222-9455 is the number. We're joined now by Brian Hensley. He's based in Bloomington, Normal, and is the parent of a 16-year-old with autism. Brian, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Also here is Diane Husby-Gordon of Champaign. She's the parent of a sixth grader in special ed. Diane, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having us.
Brian, I mentioned you're the parent of a teenager. We'll get to schooling in a moment, but tell me about your son. What's he like? What's he into?
So our youngest son is just turned 16, and he was diagnosed with autism on the autism spectrum around 3 years old. And we just noticed that he had some developmental delays as he was growing. So we were able to enroll him in early childhood special education in public schools, and he's been in since he was three. He is a non-vocal child with autism. He can ask for things, but he uses a device to communicate with us.
Interesting. So what sort of, say more about what is his schooling like? What sort of accommodations does he get?
So he requires a one-on-one assistant at school. He has all sorts of accommodations. He gets physical therapy. He gets He gets speech therapy, occupational therapy. And again, like I said, he has a one-on-one assistant because he requires a lot of attention. So they do a lot of hand-over-hand accommodations with him. So, you know, he just has an array of different opportunities that are provided by the school.
And Diane, same sort of questions for you. I guess tell me a little bit about your daughter.
Sure. My daughter is a new teenager. We're just entering that phase. She's in sixth grade right now, and she is also autistic along with ADHD, and then she has something called apraxia of speech, which is a speech disorder that makes it difficult for her to be understood. So she is able to communicate orally, but it's often difficult to understand her. So she is funny and kind and compassionate and loves to play Minecraft with all of her friends. But going to school and learning is really, really hard for her.
What is that like? What sort of accommodations has the school set up?
Sure. So she's in what they call in middle school, they have general education co-taught classes. So she's in a class mostly with peers. Most of her classes are with peers, you know, classroom of 20, 25 kids. And then they have a general education teacher in there as well as a special education teacher. The gen ed teacher does most of the teaching, and then the special ed will pull some of the kids to do some reteaching, some additional coaching, some working on the specific goals that are on their IEPs that might have to do with that particular topic. So that's kind of her general day. She also receives speech and speech language pathology assistance. So she has speech an hour a week at school where she's learning vocabulary. She's learning some social skills and kind of how to interact with peers, which is a difficult thing for her to do, and how to interact with her teachers, which is very important as they get into middle school and have to become more independent and learn how to get their work done. So our goal is that she will be as independent as possible when she grows up. But we don't know what that looks like yet.
Yeah. I want to play a clip. This is from a recent report on the PBS NewsHour. We're going to hear Judy Woodruff talking with Spencer Nichols, who is a 14-year-old with Down syndrome.
It's kind of a rough day for me, but maybe I'll learn some days. And my mom helps me a lot.
His mother, Pam Nichols, says he's denied the same chance to succeed as his non-disabled peers. She says he can't pick his own elective classes and isn't progressing like he should.
And there are six students, and they're all taught at the same level.
I have to challenge the school to go to the library and use the data from the testing to say Spencer can read at a third or fourth grade level. These are appropriate books. It stalls his development and it doesn't make him necessarily ready for society.
So obviously every family situation is different. Every student has a different experience. But Brian Hensley, I want to ask you about your youngest son in your family. What sort of challenges, if you have, experienced in getting what he needs in school?
We've been pretty fortunate with our experiences for the most part with his schooling. We've had for the most part really good teachers, and currently the district has the ability with funding from the government to provide enough classroom assistance that can, you know, be of service to the students and be of assistance to the classroom teacher. And I think that clip really hits upon something as a parent myself that's concerning about that young man is, you know, one of the things that the government is talking about is when they take away the Department of Education is to, you know, they're claiming they're not changing any of the funding, but that the funding is then going to be sent to the state level. But my biggest concern then is where is going to be the accountability? I've not read or heard anything about the accountability of funding. So for that young man that we just heard, or for my son, how do I know that once that money is given to each state that he is going to continue to receive the same funding that pays for the services under the IDEA grant,
Or is it, you know, Director McMahon is talking about raising teacher salaries and providing more resources for classrooms, which, you know, put me first in line to raise salaries for teachers. I'm all for it. But, you know, if we're giving money over to the state to determine where that block of money goes, I would like to know where the accountability is. So I know that young man that we heard in the clip is receiving the same, if not more, supports and services from what we currently get from the Department of Education, the IDEA grant, versus that pile of money given to states that could be allocated to different resources, thus then negatively impacting our children with disabilities with the IEPs and Section 504s.
Hmm. Diane Husby-Gordon, I wonder if you or anyone in your network has experienced any challenges in getting the support you feel you need.
Sure. Personally, we've had significant challenges with getting the support that we need for our daughter. The teachers are all fabulous, like Brian mentioned, but the structure is kind of hard to work through sometimes. And kids present very differently. So it's kind of hard to figure out. Like, for instance, my daughter is very compliant at school. She's a very pleasant child. She doesn't bother anybody. And so it's really easy for people to kind of overlook her as she's not absorbing information because she's not causing any problems. So for us to get services at the beginning was very difficult because they were dealing more with kids who are more behaviorally, you know, disrupting class and that sort of thing. So to get them to recognize that my daughter was having issues, even though her test scores showed it, it was hard to get the support. So, and I know other people have walked into the same situation in our school district where they think their child has a disability and the school just completely says, I'm sorry, but your kid's not going to qualify, without even going through the steps to see if the child might qualify, going through those evaluations that Michelle and Jen were talking about earlier. So one of the things I worry about with the dissolution of oversight is actually where do we hold people accountable, not just for the money, but for actually providing the adequate services. Right now, there was a robust process that you could go through to create complaints within your district or within your state, or even through OSEP and the Office of Civil Rights to ensure that IDEA was being followed. And that is my big concern as all this is unfolding, is where do we go for accountability in providing services for the kids?
Yeah, that's a great point. Let me take a moment, pause here, and reintroduce our conversation. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st show. We're talking about special education today, especially amid President Trump's work to take apart the U.S. Department of Education. We're talking about what specifically, again, that could mean for special ed, from the research on what students need to the accommodations individual students get in classrooms. And as we were just saying, who holds the authorities accountable for making sure that actually happens. We're talking about this with Brian Hensley from Bloomington Normal, Diane Husby-Gordon in Champaign. They're both parents of students in special ed. Jen Curran, a social worker in Sterling, Illinois, at a special ed co-op. Michelle Sands, an assistant professor in special ed at Northern Illinois University. And Valerie Mazzotti, a special ed professor and researcher at the University of Kansas. And so I guess, Dr. Sands, let me come back to you. So when a student isn't getting the support they need, what role does the federal government, the Department of Education, through now at least, have in remedying that situation?
I'm glad you asked. Thanks for asking, because I wanted to expand on what both Diane and Brian mentioned. I mean, the responsibility of running public schools has always been held by local and state boards of ed. However, the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, ensures all American children, regardless of where they live or what they need, receive a free and appropriate public education. And by dismantling the DOE, that could have profound impacts on special education in Illinois and other states. It's hard to predict how, because it's very fluid right now. We don't know how the details are going to shake out, but it's important to know that if a child has an individualized education program And say, for instance, the parents or the teachers feel like they're not necessarily receiving the services and support that is within that IEP, there are two ways that a parent or a teacher or school district can go about kind of addressing that. One is through the Office of Civil Rights, which is, well, has been historically within the Department of Education. You can voice a complaint and the OCR would, or the Office of Civil Rights would investigate for free to determine if there was something that occurred that needs to be resolved, and they would help in resolving that issue. The other way of going about addressing the potential issue would be to go more legally. All families and school districts have, we do have due process procedures where there is a process that can be followed to kind of go and voice their concern about whether a child is receiving a free and appropriate public education. Oftentimes that does result in legal, different kind of legal services. So that can be costly, not only to families, but also to school districts as well. And so it's really important to recognize that the Department of Education, because they do provide more a much more cost-effective service, as well as a way of ensuring that children aren't being discriminated against, disproportionately disciplined, that every child's receiving a free and appropriate public education, that is a big concern, is because we don't know what that will look like if it moves, say, for instance, to Health and Human Services, which is what is being voiced.
Jen Curran, I know you wanted to get in there on what we've been talking about. I'll bounce it over to you.
Yeah, just to kind of elaborate a little bit more on what Dr. Sands and some of the concerns the parents have been expressing is that, you know, the whole reason the Department of Education has to exist is because states would not fund poor schools in the past. You know, when we talk about when the DOE was actually implemented in 1979, 1980, it was because the states were not providing those services to students with disabilities. And they wouldn't follow the civil rights laws, especially states in the South. Right now, it may not be a concern for Illinois. I think our governor, with Governor Pritzker, education is one of his primary focuses. But, you know, that's not to say in the future, if it was left up to the states, that we would have, you know, that backing from the governor. Also, just to kind of, you know, one of the things that Brian was talking about as far as funding is that I agree that there really has not been any discussion on how that funding is going to, if funding from the federal government is going to be distributed and given to the states, or if the states are going to have to come up with their own funding. So when you talk about, you know, currently in Illinois, there's $641 million of IDEA funding that we get from the Department of Education. Where is that going to come from if the state has to come up with it? Or, you know, when you look at the Pell Grants, there's over $1.2 billion to Pell Grants. And for a lot of our districts, we're already in a special ed shortage for staff. So when we look at teachers, school social workers, school psychologists, there is already a shortage, not only in Illinois, but nationwide. So if they're not providing those Pell Grants at the secondary education or post-secondary education level in the colleges, and we're not having people get into education, we're no longer going to have those professionals that are going to be able to provide those services in the districts.
All right, we need to take another break. Before we go, I do want to play a clip. Last week we had a bigger conversation on sort of the overall Department of Ed layoffs. And one of our guests for that was Sharia Smith, who's president of the union representing Ed Department employees. She's a civil rights attorney who herself was laid off from the department. Here's a little of what she had to say.
Some of the cases we were receiving in our offices were from college students, stating that they, you know, were on record, should have been receiving extra time for their test, and for whatever reason, weren't receiving those accommodations. And so that's, we were there to enforce their rights as American citizens. And though those laws are still on the books, there's no one to enforce them.
All right, we are going to continue talking about special education and what could be happening to it as the Trump administration continues working to dismantle the Federal Department of Education. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. This is The 21st Show. We'll be right back. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Special education is one of the biggest functions of the U.S. Department of Education. We're talking about what that means for students, parents, teachers, and schools, and how all of this is being affected by President Trump's dismantling of the department, even as he says those functions will go elsewhere in government.
If you look at the Pell Grants, supposed to be a very good program, Title I funding, and resources for children with special disabilities and special needs, they're going to be preserved in full and redistributed to various other agencies and departments that will take very good care of them.
We're talking about this with two parents, Diane Husby-Gordon in Champaign and Brian Hensley in Bloomington Normal. Also, Michelle Sands, who's an assistant professor in special ed at Northern Illinois University. Jen Curran, a social worker at a special ed co-op in Sterling, Illinois. And Valerie Mazzotti, a special ed professor and researcher at the University of Kansas. 800-222-9455 to join us. Dr. Mazzotti, I wanted to ask you how research informs special ed practices in the classroom, but our time is getting short, so I guess I'll just maybe skip ahead to asking what is happening to research on these topics under the Trump administration so far?
Well, that's an excellent question, Brian. I think that the cuts to the Institute for Education Sciences, in addition to some of the cuts that will be happening around the technical assistance and dissemination centers, are going to greatly impact that research to practice gap that we've been trying to fill across the field of special education. One of the biggest concerns is the impact on the provision of high quality and accurate information that goes to states. I'll echo what Brian said about, not knowing where the funds are going is going to directly impact our students related to the accommodations they receive. One of the things that has happened related to my work is that they have terminated contracts through the Institute for Education Sciences National Center for Education Evaluation. One project being Charting My Path, which was a project to improve post-school outcomes for students with disabilities and their families across the country. And by canceling that contract, it impacted approximately 1,600 students with disabilities and their families across 13 school districts and 60 plus high schools across the country, from Alaska all the way down over to the East Coast, Massachusetts, and all the way down to South Carolina. They also terminated a contract, which was the National Longitudinal Transition Study 2012 Phase 2. NLTS has been funded since 1987, has provided the overall picture about what the landscape looks like for students with disabilities, both in school and post-school outcomes. And so that is somewhat devastating because it provides a national picture of what's happening with our students and youth. The cuts to the research arm, I believe, are going to have a direct impact on our states and our local education agencies. We have states that are actively participating in research through the National Center of Special Education Research, which is an arm of the Institute for Education Sciences that's helping them look at outcomes for students with disabilities, in addition to being able to scale up practices that they know are evidence-based or research-based across their districts and schools. And so that, you know, the research to practice piece is critical and has been something that IDEA 2004 has really put money into to help ensure that schools and districts and states are using practices that are based on research and evidence.
Dr. Sands, so you are educating the next generation of special education teachers, and we know there is a shortage in this field of not only teachers, but paraprofessionals and social workers and others. How is this affecting? What are you hearing from your students and what you are telling them about this new period of uncertainty we're in?
Sure. And I think that's the worst part of kind of a lot of this for not only us professionals in the field, but I think parents alike, is that uncertainty, right? So there's just not a lot of transparency. The Department of Education had provided incentives and supports for thousands of pre-service as well as in-service teachers to serve students with disabilities and address teacher shortages specific to special education. And at this point, it's really unclear to what extent these programs will continue. So it's hard because we've already been trying to address teacher shortages, and this was how we were kind of trying to do that. But now with this in place, we're not, it's unsure how we're going to go ahead.
Jen Curran is somebody who is actually working in the field day after day. I wonder how that's affected you and how you and your colleagues are thinking about what may be coming.
Well, just like Dr. Sands had said, the uncertainty. So like, you know, we're already struggling to meet the needs of students in our districts, especially in our rural districts. As I stated, our cooperative serves 11 school districts that are in rural Northwest Illinois. And they already struggle to meet the needs of all students, not only students with special needs or students with disabilities. But one of the things that that we have been working hard as far as the Illinois Education Association is to make sure that we are contacting our legislators, contacting all of our federal, the attorney generals, different things in order to make sure that our voices are heard. So that, you know, right now the National Education Association has, as of Monday, has put up, they're suing Linda McMahon and the U.S. Department of Education. They've joined parent and student right organizations along with the NAACP to fight this, to make sure that our students are getting the support that they need and getting the services that they should be provided. Unfortunately, we're not sure where this is going to lead, and that uncertainty is really kind of scary at this point.
Dr. Mazzotti, I saw you had your hand up there.
Yeah, I just wanted to just really quick just follow up on what Michelle had said related to teacher preparation and special education teachers. So the Department of Education and under IDEA, the Office of Special Education Programs provide grant opportunities for to prepare special education teachers at the undergraduate, master's, and PhD levels to prepare teachers to work in the field of special education, in addition to preparing leaders who can become faculty to help train teachers in the field of special education. And I think that without those grants, we're going to have a hard time filling those shortages. And we know that shortages of special education teachers across the country right now is really in a critical place because we need special education teachers. So I just wanted to follow up with that.
Yeah. Brian Hensley, I want to come back to you. And I mentioned at the start, and as we've been talking about, students with disabilities have had the right to this free, appropriate public education. And as we heard, it wasn't so long ago that special ed was separate from public schools. And even now, there are private schools that will not take students with disabilities. I wonder, for you, for your youngest son, for your family, without access to that education, what changes, what difference has it made?
I'm sorry, if he didn't have access to his current education?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe you can just speak broadly about the difference it's made for your youngest son and your family.
Well, I mean, you know, we started off, you had asked about, you know, just children with disabilities in general, and there are so many different disabilities and so many different avenues that IEPs are created for. And I know I'm speaking in general terms about students, but, you know, if we were to, the rate of IEPs is increasing. The rate of students being diagnosed with disabilities is increasing, and the funding is not. And so the concern then would be, you know, how are these students serviced if they're not going to get, whether it be my son, whether it be Diane's son, Diane's child, the young man we heard on the radio, or any other child with an IEP or Section 504, there are not enough places outbound of a public school education to service all the needs of all of the kids who have disabilities. So we're talking about a very severe impact that is provided with FAPE right now, and the funding and accountability by the Department of Education, the Office of Civil Rights. So we're talking about the potential of a very profound effect on our public schools that trickles down all the way to my house and my 16-year-old son.
Yeah. Diane Husby-Gordon, similar question to you. Maybe you can just speak about the importance of having public education be available to children like your daughter.
Sure. Thank you. As Brian said, with, you know, public schools, private schools aren't going to be able to support our kids and aren't required to by law to support our kids with their additional accommodations. Our goal is that Rory will become an independent adult. She'll be able to hold some sort of a job when she is older and become a contributing member of society. If she didn't have the supports that she has at school now, it's unlikely that that would happen for her, because I'm not a teacher. I am not, you know, I would do my best with her, but doing homeschooling and so forth, but she would not have the same outcomes as professional educators working with specialized curriculum for her and teaching her the way that she needs to learn. And they're excellent at doing that. Our teachers are amazing. So without this, we're setting up this pipeline of kids who aren't going to be able to reach their potentials, who are then going to need even more services as adults. And then we have even more problems with, you know, what happens after graduation from high school. So the whole thing is kind of a growing problem from start to finish if we don't help these kids achieve the most independence they can get.
We're going to have to leave it there. We will continue following this issue. I want to thank our guests for this discussion, parents Brian Hensley especially and Diane Husby-Gordon. Thank you both so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you for having us. Welcome.
And I also want to thank Jen Curran, who is a social worker at a special ed co-op in Sterling, Illinois, Dr. Valerie Mazzotti, a professor of special education at the University of Kansas, and Dr. Michelle Sands, special education professor at Northern Illinois University. Thank you all as well for sharing your time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for our program today. We'd love to hear what you thought about what we have been talking about, whether you like it, you didn't like it. If you think we got something factually wrong, for whatever reason, you can let us know by sending us an email. talk@21stshow.org is the address. talk@21stshow.org. We don't always have time to reply to everyone who writes in, but we do read them all, and we definitely appreciate hearing from you. You can find our email address and every other way to contact us, social media, voicemail. It's all on our website, which is 21stshow.org. We've got all of our past segments there. You can find links to subscribe to our podcasts, or for that, you can look us up on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen. Coming up on tomorrow's program, a coalition of policy organizations are suggesting an overhaul of Illinois' sales tax. Their big idea is that taxing more services could be the key to fixing a system they say is stuck in the past. Plus, we'll talk with Central Illinois composer Carlos Carrillo on the upcoming premiere of his new opera in Chicago. That's all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda and Harrison Malkin. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.